Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. We welcome you. Today, the latest on why you should not be drinking those high fructose corn syrup beverages, what flaxseed can do for your body that we didn't know until now, and also, very important, glucosamine. It protects against cancer and heart disease and death from all causes in a new landmark study. We knew it was good if you have arthritis or inflammation in your joints. This is altogether new information. So the best from peer-reviewed literature on natural, non-toxic ways of living. My guest in the second part of our program will be David Crow from Calgary, Canada. David is president of the Reappraising AIDS Society and a member of the Canadian Association of Journalists. We're going to take on the HIV/AIDS controversy. They want everyone over the age of 15 to be tested. I'm saying the test is a fraud. There is no basis in science. Secondly, all it does is allow a few select individuals who own the patents to get fabulously wealthy. If you are tested positive for HIV, you may not have the virus at all, but rather have any one of a dozens of conditions that give you a false reading, and then immediately they're going to say you should be on medications, which themselves have never been proven beneficial, only deadly. I'm going to begin doing a challenge to the AIDS myths every week. We are inviting the leading pro-AIDS activists on this program. I hope that they come. I believe it's in the public interest for you to see what their arguments are and our challenges to those arguments. Then, our issue today is, you've been told we were in Afghanistan for what reason? Because Al-Qaeda's there, the Taliban's there. That's where the people went after they blew up the Twin Towers. Those are the reasons, right? Wrong. We've been lied to all along. There's really one reason that we're in Afghanistan and will continue to stay there. And that's because, well, I'll give you that in our issue segment. Also, time permitting, we're going to do a little in-depth challenge to the former mayor of the former governor of Pennsylvania, who today came out saying, New York, you should frack. All right, that's his position. I'm going to share reasons from Elizabeth Rody on why we should not frack, and more importantly, how there is now a confluence where people are wanting healthier food, locally grown. That's great. But now you have fracking beside locally grown things. That's bad. I'm going to give you very specific examples of farmers, including organic farmers, who became deadly ill and their produce could no longer be sold, their animals could no longer be slaughtered because of the chemical contamination. None of this is being discussed. We'll discuss it. Also from John Acheson from Common Dreams, when it comes to the environment, it's the physical cliff, stupid. We can lead in our efforts, but we're not. Now, what he's referring to is we've been talking about the financial cliff. That's not the issue. It's the environmental cliff, and that's real, and that's happening. As you see, we have a lot to share. Let us begin. I can remember, I'm sure many of you were the same growing up as baby boomers in the 50s and 60s, that you were limited in how much of a junk food, and everyone knew what a junk food was, that you could have. I'm sure your mother also reprimanded you for eating too close to dinner, that it would spoil your appetite. She was right. Your grandmother, who told your mother that you should really masticate your food and chew it, they were both right. And that a good walk after a meal is outstanding for digestion, also right. Today, we don't take a walk after eating. We go in, lay down on a couch, watch television, or sit in front of a computer. But more importantly, there was a time when we knew, and our parents knew, that if we loaded up on sugar, it would kill our appetite for healthier food. So, in my home, we could have lemonade, Kool-Aid. My brothers drank it. But we were restricted in how much pop was allowed. It was, I think, one day a week. That was it. And if you liked or didn't like it, that's all you could have it. Here's the latest today. What a difference in time. This is from WebMD. This is mainstream. I'll quote this from Brenda Goodman. Countries that mix high fructose corn syrup into processed foods and soft drinks have higher rates of diabetes than countries that don't use the sweetener. A study published in the journal Global Health, researchers compared the average availability of high fructose corn syrup to rates of diabetes in 43 countries. And then they found that the more high fructose corn syrup a country uses, the more diabetes they have. And it's really bad in the United States. Now, I don't eat any high fructose corn syrup. I don't eat any processed sugars. And yet, instead of looking at the mean levels, they look at average levels. Now, what does that mean? It means you have approximately 314 million people in the United States. So they take a one-day-old infant that could weigh 6 pounds, and they take a morbidly obese person that could weigh 500 pounds. And everyone in between, those who don't eat sugar and those eat a lot of sugar, and then they average it. They take the total amount of sugar consumed and divide it into the total population, so we each have about 150 pounds a year. Well, that's completely unscientific. It's inaccurate because I don't have any. I know that all the newborn babies don't have any, and I know a lot of diabetics don't have any, and health-conscious people don't. So that means that the people actually consuming sugar are consuming very large amounts. But as long as you're doing an average, you'll never get to the truth of it. So this is a study that's important because it tells us this is high fructose, it's in everything, is going to contribute to our level of diabetes. And this was done at the Keck School of Medicine, University of Southern California. And of course, the industry will lie about all of it. Flaxseed. I don't recommend that most people eat raw flaxseed for a simple reason. If you put a teaspoon, as some people do, of flaxseed into your cereal in the morning or into a smoothie, it's going to go right through your body, pretty much undigested. That's why, especially with some seeds like alfalfa seeds and sunflower seeds and pumpkin seeds, you really have to chew them thoroughly, or better still, much better still, take the nut butters and seed butters. You combine now the raw nut butters and seed butters. There are several companies making them. You can get small jars, large jars. They're anywhere from $6 to $19, depending upon the type of nut or seed. And they're also blending them, which is also a good idea. They haven't done the flax seed except for one company. That is the best way. Either the flax oil, which is good from the cold-pressed flax seed, because that's giving your lignans and what's really good, the omega-3 fatty acids. That's what you need. But if you just eat the flax seed, it's not going to digest. It's going to go right through you. Now, here's why you should have flax seed in your diet. Because the more you have, the lower your blood pressure. In fact, in one study that was presented at the American Heart Association Scientific Sessions, they found that a flaxseed-rich diet was able to decrease systolic and diastolic blood pressure by 10 and 7 mm per hg, which is very good. Quote, "This is the largest decrease in blood pressure ever shown by any dietary intervention, including the Mediterranean diet and low-sodium diets." Dr. Pierce said on this. Sorry, Dr. Pierce, that is not correct. over 15 years ago in one of the 47 separate lifestyle and diet modification intervention studies with humans that I did, along with Dr. Martin Feldman. We were able to prove, just with blood pressure, we could lower substantially below this with diet and exercise and supplements. So that one also worked. Quote, we expect this kind of improvement in people with hypertension could reduce their incidence of heart attack and stroke by 50%. That's good. So one more reason to have your flax oil. Now, there is a vegan flax oil on the market that has, look on the side where it's servings, and it tells you how much DHA you're going to get and how many milligrams of omega-3 acids you're going to get. My recommendation would be from 300 of the DHA and 1,500 of the omega-3 fatty acids twice a day. That will help prevent heart attacks. That will help prevent strokes. That can help turn off inflammation in the brain and the spinal cord. That could help people with MS, Alzheimer's, dementia, memory loss. That can turn off inflammation in your joints. It's inexpensive. It's easy, abundant, but make sure you're getting the organic. For about 10 years, the primary use of a nutrient called CLA, C stands for conjugated, L stands for linoleic, and A stands for acid, conjugated linoleic acid, was it would help people speed up their metabolism and therefore help people who are overweight lose weight. That's good. There's a new use for it, based upon University of North Carolina, Wake Forest University School of Medicine, and Virginia Tech research, all published in the peer-reviewed journal Clinical Nutrition. What it does, quote, dietary supplements of CLA may benefit intestinal health, including Crohn's disease. So that is good. Quote, CLA represents a promising new supportive intervention for gut inflammation. This is in contrast with the results of human clinical studies using 3 polyunsaturated fatty acids and IBD that remain largely unimpressive. The present study is impressive. So there you have it. You're getting a good mixture of anti-inflammatories. They're suggesting 6 grams a day for 12 weeks. That's how they got their results. So if you have Crohn's disease, in fact, if you have any itis, CLA would be beneficial. Vitamin D proven to help combat breast cancer. This is a good study, not the only one, but it's a big one. 67,721 French women were in this study. And what they did, they measured their criteria, and then they said the following. This is from Mainstream Medicine, Medical News Today. Breast cancer is the most frequent type of cancer affecting women worldwide. Although the chances of recovery are around 90%, this only applies if the cancer is detected early. Surgery, chemotherapy, and hair loss, or even a mastectomy, women suffering from breast cancer have to contend with all of these possible consequences. There is, therefore, virtually no other illness which frightens women more. And since breast cancer rates increase every year, the diagnosis and treatment options are of particular interest to scientists. It has long been known that vitamin D levels can reduce the risk of breast cancer. This has been demonstrated in numerous epidemiological and laboratory studies. With this study of 67,721 French women, scientists led by Pierre Indel have found that a minimum vitamin D level is necessary in order to prevent breast cancer. And that's good. So, vitamin D, once again, there's probably, I'm going to guess, 10,000 studies on vitamin D. It is simply one of our superstar nutrients. If you're getting sunlight every day over about a third of your body for at least 45 minutes, you're getting that. Most people won't, not this time of year. Therefore, 1 to 3,000 international units of vitamin D3 each day is so important for your health, and this is showing it could help prevent breast cancer. More Facebook friends means more stress. This is from Science Daily, University of Edinburgh Business School. And here's what it says. A large number of friends on Facebook may appear impressive, but according to a new report, the more social circles a person is linked to online, the more likely social media will be a source of stress. Stress arises, of course, when a user presents a version of themselves on Facebook that is unacceptable to some of their online friends, and such as posts displaying behavior such as swearing or recklessness or drinking and smoking. As older people join the site, this has become an increasing problem as their expectations may be very different than those of younger users. 55% of parents follow their children on Facebook. Likewise, more than half of employers claim not to have hired someone based upon their Facebook page. So, Well, why don't you just turn off Facebook? I don't Twitter, never have, don't intend to. I prefer to speak with people directly or to write in longhand because it strengthens the connection to language, to the understanding of linguistics, to proper communication. Also, I suggested recently to one of the listeners of this program who's obsessed with Facebooking, and I said, you've gotten yourself off of one drug, but now you've simply replaced it with another form of distraction. And more often than not, the drugs that we take or the addictions we have are in part, not entirely, but are in part a form of distraction. And in this case, you can distract yourself by spending all your time on Facebook, as many people do, but that now is only going to stress you more. I mean, how many people who say they're your friends are really your friends? In fact, my policy on my Facebook page is simple. If you come on to attack someone, you won't be allowed on. It's that simple. There are gazillion places you can go and attack and slander and abuse and violate people. Mine is not one of those sites. I believe that if you're going to share information, share it so that it benefits everyone, that no one is excluded from the beneficial information, meaning the information is not prejudiced to one group over another, and that say something constructive. And boy, it's easy to see who don't have lives. All they have are their obsessions. An unfilled life, they try to find that fulfillment by playing out as judge, jury, and prosecutor on Facebook. So infantile, so childish, so stupid. And finally, when it comes to glucosamine, it's one of those very important and unique supplements. Now, many of you have probably heard me speak about use it if you have inflammation in your joints, arthritis, for example, and it works. New research, however, shows that it does a lot more than that. They followed 77,500 participants aged 50 to 76 years old for 2 years, and then they compared their health over the previous 10 years, and here's what they found. The glucosamine protects you from death and heart disease, and women benefit the most. In fact, there was 18% less death from any cause in those who used glucosamine versus those that did not. Glucosamine also protects against cancer, and it also is a powerful anti-inflammatory. In fact, it reduced the risk of leukemia by 19%, and for all other cancers combined, there was a reduced death of 33%. Now, wouldn't you think your oncologist, your primary care physician, if you have cancer, would be telling you take glucosamine? If anyone, and all these cancers, had a reduced risk of 33%, that would be more than any chemotherapy or radiation or combination of the two combined. Just a single supplement. But there it is. In a major study, all out. All right? I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Men meet those dancing feet on the avenue I'm taking you to.
Second Street. Hear the beat of dancing feet. It's the song I love, the melody of 42nd Street. Little bees from out the bees, innocent and sweet. Sexy ladies from the 80s, more indiscreet. They're side by side, they're glorified. Where the underworld can't meet the elite. Where the underworld can't meet the elite. 42nd
Love that old music, including Broadway, 42nd Street. Our environmental segment, then we'll go to our guest. From the environment, this is from Professor Harvey Wasserman, who does a program here on this station. And he's warning us about our nuclear power collapse. It's getting even more dangerous. I'll quote him. He said, "In the wake of this fall's election, the disintegration of America's decrepit atomic reactor fleet is fast approaching critical mass. Unless our no nukes movement can get the worst of them shut down, Barack Obama may be very lucky to get through his second term without a major reactor disaster. All 104 licensed U.S. reactors were designed before 1975, that's a third of a century ago. All but one went online in the 1980s or earlier. Plunging natural gas prices, largely due to ecological disastrous fracking, are dumping even fully amateurized U.S. reactors into deep red ink." And he goes on to say about San Onofre Units 1 and 2 near major earthquake faults on the coast between Los Angeles and San Diego have been shut for more than 9 months by core breakdowns in their newly refurbished steam generators. A fix could exceed more than $500 million. And the containment dome at North Florida's Crystal River was seriously damaged during repair. And that's going to take $2 billion to correct. And it will probably never reopen. So he's going on to talk about Ohio's Davis-Bessie as structural containment cracks. Structural containment cracks that should have forced it to close down years ago. And others have been found at South Carolina's VC Summer Reactor Pressure Vessel. So Vermont Yankee and New York's Indian Point and New Jersey's Oyster Creek, damaged by Hurricane Sandy, all these should be shut down. So what he's saying is, let us join together and close down all of our nuclear reactors. Good idea. I've been mentioning that right now, those who think they can continue to stay safely at our oceans, shores, are living in denial. There is no accurate model of how long it's going to take for the water to really increase. Someone will say, well, then increase 11.7 millimeters. You have to understand how vast the ocean is and how much water that is. But now more and more water is pouring in every second from Greenland, and it's going to tip, meaning at some point, in the very near future, a big piece of that whole giant mass of ice, 2 miles deep, three times as big as Texas, and being pulled every second of the day towards the ocean, is going to break off and come in there. Then we can see a big jump. But in the interim, we're going to see warmer water, more water, and more hurricanes. Here is the latest from Cotter, from Michael Casey, quote, "An area of Arctic sea ice bigger than the United States melted this year, according to the UN Weather Agency, which said the dramatic decline illustrates that climate change is happening, quote, before our eyes. You bet it is. That's 4,570,000 square miles of ice melted this year. And that means we're going to have changing weather and changing temperatures, and that could stop the circulation of warm weather, water going to the north through Ireland, England, and back down. If that shuts off, you've just thrown all of Eastern Europe into a new form of an ice age. I'm Gary Nall. We're here to talk about issues that can make a difference in our lives. One of the issues is fracking. Since the governor, Rendell, the former governor, was a big proponent of fracking, and Ohio and Pennsylvania are two of the most heavily fracked states. Oklahoma's also up there. Wyoming is up there. And now they want to do it in New York. So when he was saying why we should frack, I'm going to share from Elizabeth Rody why we should not frack. And this is from The Nation. It was produced from Food and Environmental Network Report. I'll quote her. Jackie Schickel and her 60 cattle live in the top left corner of North Dakota, a windswept, golden-hued landscape in the heart of the Bakken's Shale. Her neighbors love her Black Angus beef, but she's no longer sharing or eating it, not since fracking began on 32 oil and gas wells within 3 miles of her 160-acre ranch, and five of her cows dropped dead. She herself is now in poor health. A handsome 53-year-old with a faded blonde ponytail and direct blue eyes, she often feels lightheaded when she ventures outside. She limps and has chronic pain in her lungs, as well as rashes that have lingered for a year. Once, a visit to the barn ended with respiratory distress and a trip to the emergency room. She has also back pain linked to her overworked kidneys, and some mornings she urinates a stream of blood. Ambient air testing by a certified environmental consultant detected elevated levels of benzene, methane, chloroform, butane, propane, toluene, and xylene, compounds associated with drilling and fracking, and also with cancers, birth defects, and organ damage. Her well tested high for sulfates, chromium, chloride, and strontium. Her blood test positive for acetone, plus the heavy metals arsenic linked to skin lesions and cancers and cardiovascular disease, and also muscle weakness. She and her husband, who works in oil-filled services, have recently lost crowns and fillings from their teeth. Tooth loss is associated with radiation poisoning and high selenium levels. It's also been found in her water. State health and agricultural officials acknowledged her air and water tests, but told her she had nothing to worry about. Her doctors, however, diagnosed her with neurotoxic damage and constricted airways. Quote, I realize that this place is killing me and my cattle. She began using inhalers and nebulizers, switched to bottled water, and quit eating her own beef and her own vegetables from her own garden. And my health improved when I did that, she said. But I thought, oh my God, what am I doing here on this land? Her story reminds us that farmers near fracking and who need clean water, clean air, and clean soil to produce healthy produce, but as the largest private landholders in shale areas across the nation, farmers are disproportionately being approached by energy companies eager to extract oil and gas from beneath their properties. Earlier this year, Michelle Bamberger, an Ithaca veterinarian, and Robert Oswald, a professor of molecular medicine at Cornell's College of Veterinary Medicine, published a peer-reviewed article showing a link between hydrofracking for gas and illnesses in food animals. The authors compiled case studies of 24 farmers in six shale gas states whose livestock experienced neurological, reproductive, and acute gastrointestinal problems. Exposed either accidentally or instantly to fracking chemicals in the water or air, scores of animals have died. The death toll is rising. Now, exposed animals, quote, are making their way into the food system, and it's very worrisome to us. They live in areas that have tested positive for air, water, and soil contamination. Some of these chemicals could appear in milk and meat products made from these animals. In Louisiana, 17 cows died after an hour's exposure to spilled fracking fluid and from respiratory failure. In north central Pennsylvania, 140 cattle were exposed to fracking wastewater when impoundment was breached, and approximately 70 cows died. The remainder produced 11 calves, of which only 3 survived. In western Pennsylvania, an overflowing waste pit sent fracking chemicals into a pond in a pasture where pregnant cows grazed. Half their calves were born dead. The following year's animal births were sexually skewed, with 10 females and 2 males, and said the usual 50-50. In addition to the cases documented by Bamberger, hair testing of sick animals that grazed around well pads in New Mexico found petroleum residues in 54 of 56 animals. In North Dakota, wind-borne fly ash, which is used to solidify the waste from drilling holes and contains heavy metals, settled over a farm. One cow, which either inhaled or ingested, died, and a stock bomb was contaminated with arsenic at double the acceptable level for drinking water. Cattle that die on the farm don't make it to the nation's food supply, though they're often rendered for animal feed for chickens and pigs, but herd mates that appear healthy despite being exposed to some compounds do. Farmers aren't required to prove their livestock are free of fracking contaminants before middlemen purchase them. And fracking a single well requires 7 million gallons of water, plus an additional 400,000 gallons of additives, including lubricants, biocides, scale and rust inhibitors, solvents, foaming and defoaming agents, emulsifiers and de-emulsifiers, stabilizers and breakers. About 70% of the liquid that goes down a borehole eventually comes up, now further tainted with such deep earth compounds as sodium, chloride, bromide, arsenic, barium, uranium, radium, and radon. And this super salty produced water, or brine, can be stored on site for reuse, depending upon the state regulations. It can also be held in plastic-lined pits until it evaporates or injected back into the earth. At almost every stage of developing and operating an oil or gas well, chemicals and compounds can be introduced in the environment. And radioactive material above the ground background levels have been detected in air, water, and soil, or at near gas drilling sites. And volatile organic compounds, including benzene, toluene, ethylene, and xylene, waft from flares, engines, compressors, pipelines, flanges, open tanks, spills, and ponds, and you breathe it. And underground, petrochemicals can migrate along fissures through abandoned or orphan wells or leaky well casings. And the oil and gas industry estimates that 60% of all wells will leak over a period of time. And brine can spill from holding ponds or pipelines, and it can be spread legally in some places on roadways to control dust and ice melt. Truck drivers have also been known to illegally dump this liquid in creeks or fields. So that's the story they're not telling you. And if they say it's safe, well, just look at Dakota. Reported 1,000 accidental releases of oil, drilling, wastewater, and other fluids, with many more releases likely. So, and in Pennsylvania, Governor, ex-governor, you should have told the public that there were 2,392 violations of the law that posed a direct threat to the environmental and safety of communities. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Before we go to Calgary, Canada, and speak with David Crow on the issue of AIDS, let's say hello for a few moments to Dr. Roy Spicer. I asked Dr. Spicer to come on today because we have been able to fulfill all of our pledges through our radio station. Hopefully in the next week, those at Pacific and BAI will fulfill theirs. But I'm concerned, based upon a front-page article I read in today's New York Times, showing how many contaminants, right now as we speak, are still in the water because of those water purification treatment plants either being broken down completely or not working or having more toxins than they can actually filter. So when it makes the front page of the New York Times and it's telling you how bad all this effluent is in water, I'm thinking three things. A, how can we help the people who are out there need to filter that water? B, why should we assume that this is a one-off bad experience? I see nothing but bad experiences environmentally happening. I see a Category 2, 3, or 4 hitting us possibly next year. Also, if you have the worst summers, which we just had, you're likely to have one of the worst winters where when you have snow, you'll have a lot of it, more than normal, and that can break down power lines, and you're right back to where you were. No power, no electricity, no water pumps, no water. So for those reasons, I asked Roy, did he have any more of the filters on hand that he could immediately ship to people who needed them, along with a three-hour CD on survival? And he's on the phone now. And Roy Spicer has his doctorate from Rutgers University, has a distinguished long and academic and practical career in water purification systems and its biochemistry. Nice to have you with us, Roy.
Thank you, Gary.
What is the reality of people who don't have healthy water or don't know whether their water is safe to drink?
Well, Gary, I sent down an advisory after the storm, and because of the unprecedented surge, numerous treatment plants were, you know, non-functioning. And, for example, New Jersey issued 20 boil alerts, which means the water is not potable. You can't drink it. And what I advise people is that even after they treat the water with chlorine and disinfection chemicals, I still wouldn't recommend drinking it for several weeks because there was all kinds of debris, for example, broken glass, filthy, dirty water, fecal matter, and E. coli bacteria. And the treatment is going to take a long-term process to clean out these main pipes, and I wouldn't allow that water in my house. But what I did recommend is that they filter the water before they boil it. And what that means is that if you take the water right out of the tap that's still contaminated and you boil it, you still have all that fecal matter and debris in it. So it's not safe to drink. If you filter it first through an emergency filter, then you could boil it, then it's safe to drink. So right now the current status is there's a lot of treatment plants that are still not operational. There's still a lot of filth in the systems, and people are not getting safe water in every area. So I'd highly recommend that they obtain an emergency gravity filter because it's made out of ceramic, and it's capable of filtering out microorganisms. It can filter out dirt, rust, and sediment, fecal matter, and any of these contaminants that have come in from the surge.
How about parasites?
100%, Gary. Okay. Those are commonly found in the water in lakes, commonly in source water. The ceramics are tested and certified 100% on Cryptosporidium and Giardia, which are common in most water systems. So this is the thing they need to do. There's still a status where a lot of systems are out of power. They're not up and running. There's still a lot of filth in the systems. And by using one of your emergency gravity filters, they can have safe drinking water.
Okay, that's what's important. How many filters do you actually have?
Well, we still have some in stock. There's people that still didn't get their orders processed from other organizations. So right now I have about 30 units in stock.
Okay. Well, all of ours were processed. We got all of our books and everything else. Everyone has gotten those, or we'll get them. All right, so what you have 30 units. That is the 3-gallon, meaning it can filter 1,000 gallons, but it can hold up 3 gallons at a time to filter. You also get the 3-hour surviving any disaster CD. Give the number people can call. This has, by the way, this has nothing to do with me. This just has when I saw this morning, I wanted to see if we could help. So for 30 people who want the filter, you can get it, because now it's going to be a hard, long time. You won't hear me mention it again, because evidently some very popular television programs and Internet people were listening to our big fundraiser, which, by the way, broke all records in the history of WBAI. I just got a letter from the station manager on that, in the history of Pacifica, in its 55-year history. So now other people are getting those filters, which is good. Nothing wrong with that. It just means that there's going to be a long waiting time, probably 5, 6, 7 months, because other people are wising up that no matter where you're at in America, you should have this. Even when I go on my once a year. Oh, by the way, I just found that I came across a lot of the photographs that I take when I go out to do my year spiritual meditation alone, or I go into the woods someplace or in the nature. And I filter the water. I'm not going to go carrying, you know, like a 10 gallons of water with me. It's, as long as I got water in a lake, I'm fine. But I've taken pictures, so I'm going to post on Monday the different places I've gone in nature. And when you see where I sit to meditate, and I'll sit there for a day at a time, then find another place day at a time, generally for a week, it'll let you appreciate what a beautiful country we have and why I believe you should make time to get out alone in nature. Don't just go do it without knowing what to do. You have to be smart enough to know that if you're going to go into a place where you've got some grizzly bears, you better be smart about what you do, because I don't want you jumping out into nature and not knowing how to handle yourself. In any case, I always have the water filter. But I'm going to post those photographs up on Monday. Yeah, give the number.
You want to give the price of the unit with the CDs?
Yeah, what would it normally run? About almost $300. What is it going to be?
Your special, that's, you have to get the price, Gary.
$190.
Yeah, okay, it'll be $190.
So they're saving over $100. Give the number twice, quickly.
Okay, it's 800-444-3563. Again, that's 800-444-3563.
Okay, thank you very much, Roy. I appreciate you getting back to us today. Again, this is because of what I saw in the New York Times this morning, and there's only 30 units. That's it.
Very good, Gary. Thank you.
Now we're going to go to our guests and our talkback segment in a moment, but let me just give you this little update. The military may prosecute troops who try to commit suicide. This is from Tim Dominic, and it says Marine Corps Private Caldwell slits his wrists and spurred a legal debate that that's consuming the Pentagon as well as the nation's top military appeals court. The court is now wrestling with the wisdom of prosecuting Caldwell for his suicide attempt. Okay. So let me just try to put this through my brain. So a person's depressed for whatever reason. Well, you know, after several tours of duty, that's understandable. After being subjected to life and death situations and possibly making decisions that in the normal course of life, a person would never be forced to make. So, and maybe the person's on meds given by and recommended by the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Defense Department, which has suicide ideation as a side effect. So a person who felt that there was nothing worth living for and tried to kill himself, you're now going to prosecute and put them in, what, prison? Well, that makes a lot of sense, I guess. Does it? That's the most insane thing, the most insensitive thing. You are such idiots in the Pentagon. And who is the head of all this? Well, the commander-in-chief. Oh, I see. You don't sign executive orders that actually protect the American consumer or your troops. So this is nothing you're going to be interested in. Could you imagine that? I think at the very least, instead of prosecuting the man, which is likely to make him double down and really commit suicide the next time, why don't you actually not recommend all of the very toxic psychomedications you're advocating? Look at the truth of it. More American service people kill themselves every day at their own hands than Al-Qaeda and the Taliban or all military conflicts every day. So, and what role does our military and our commander-in-chief play in this whole stupid charade? These men and women deserve help, not punishment. These people need compassion. Oh, I forgot. We're talking with the Pentagon. There is no such thing as compassion there. You killed 1,500,000 innocent Iraqi civilians and Afghanistan civilians. No one got around to saying, we're sorry. Oops, made a big boo-boo on that, didn't we? How did they even come to these places? Well, that's what happens when no one pays attention to the enormous bureaucracy, the corrupt bureaucracies that in this, the military-industrial complex. Let's go over and say hello to my guest who is standing by, David Crow. Hi, David.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for having me on your show again.
Good. David, of course, is the president of Reappraising Aid Society and a member of the Canadian Association of Journalists. The website is rethinkingaids.com. David, I invited you on because I want to go through something that I'm very concerned with, and I know you are as well. And we continue to invite groups like ACT UP or others on to debate you. or debate me. They won't debate. Sorry.
I think they think I bite.
Okay. Well, no. If the truth bites, then you're a tiger.
Yes.
Here's what they're recommending. Quote, HIV screening recommended for all Americans older than 15. And that's because they want to make sure that if you don't know you have AIDS, they can get to it. Then this also out from Andrew Quinn of Reuters. The U.S. lays out its plan for achieving worldwide AIDS-free generations. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton yesterday unveiled a game plan for achieving a AIDS-free generation. And, of course, she wants them to put money into testing everyone and then getting early, very good treatment. Would you take us through why you and thousands of other scientists, journalists, Nobel Prize winners, virologists have nothing to do with the current fraud that we call the war on AIDS, and explain why and give us some documentation?
Well, let's accept the accuracy of the HIV test for a moment before we criticize it. And a lot of people say the HIV test is 99.9% accurate, which is completely unbelievable for a biological test. But if we take that, that means that 1 out of 1,000 HIV test results will be false positive. In a low-risk population like the general U.S. population, with about 300 million people, my calculation is there will be about 300,000 false positive HIV tests if you test the entire population. Now, coincidentally, the CDC says there's about 250,000, which is give or take the same number, 250,000 Americans are HIV positive and they don't know it. And so what they have is there's approximately 250,000, 300,000 Americans who will be positive on an HIV test who will have a false positive test. Now, of course, that's a lot of new consumers for the highly toxic antiretroviral drugs. But the reasons not to take the HIV test, well, nobody should do something like this unless they understand the consequences. And the reasons for doing it, the test is an antibody test. It does not test for the virus. The test has never been validated against detection of the actual virus because nobody has ever purified the virus, not even from one person. So it's not possible to tell if the HIV test is really measuring HIV or just higher levels of antibodies than are normal, which could be caused by many things like receiving blood transfusions, exposure to recreational drugs, other toxic chemicals. There's many things could potentially cause a false positive HIV test. Even pregnancy is known as a risk factor. And, of course, they want to give all women, already want to give all women HIV tests while pregnant. But if you do take the HIV test, there's also new guidelines that say that basically antiretroviral drugs should be given to everyone regardless of the level of the immune cells known as CD4. It used to be that AIDS drugs were only recommended to people whose level of CD4 cells had fallen below 500, 350, 200, depending on what the local standard was. It seemed to vary over time. But in April of this year, the National Institute of Health said, we think everybody who's HIV positive should take the drugs. Well, if you multiply 250,000 new HIV-positive people by the $10,000 to $20,000 a year sales of AIDS drugs that would result from each person, you're actually talking about a fairly significant amount of money, which at the bottom is what this is is all about.
All right. A few quick answers on this. Of all the thousands of studies done on the antiretroviral drugs, the anti-AIDS drugs, have any of them been shown to actually reverse AIDS? And what is the primary cause of death in people diagnosed with AIDS in the United States?
Excellent questions, Gary. Well, the AIDS drugs, I was just looking at a new drug called dolutegravir. I can't even pronounce it, but it's from GlaxoSmithKline and Pfizer and a Japanese company. And it is measuring what they call the antiviral activity of the drug and safety relative to other drugs. So the antiviral activity basically means, does it have an effect of lowering the viral load? We don't know what the viral load really means, but does it have that effect? The drug is not tested about whether it makes people healthier, whether it makes them live longer. AIDS drugs have never been tested on that standard, so we don't know if it makes people healthier. In fact, as to answer your other question, the leading cause of death amongst people who are taking antiretrovirals is now liver failure. I was just reading another recent paper that talked about AIDS drugs causing neurological injury. That's also been known for a long time. They destroy the body's ability to produce blood. They cause potentially fatal damage to other organs such as the pancreas. So the AIDS drugs have never been shown to prolong life. They're not tested on the basis of prolonging life. And when they test safety, like they'll often say the drug has been proven to be safe, the caveat is it's proven to be no more toxic than the older combinations of drugs. So over time, the drugs have become slightly less toxic. And so that means that every time they're tested, they can say with this new drug, the viral load went down and the safety was slightly better than the old, highly toxic combinations. But that's not much of a basis on which to take these compounds. So in summary, on a basis of a test that's never been proven to detect the virus, you take drugs that have never been proven to improve the health of people against a virus that has never been proven to exist.
But David, of the 30 conditions that we call AIDS, which are all real, not
right.
One of them is liver failure. So therefore, we must surmise from multiple studies that the number one reason people are dying of AIDS is the treatment.
Well, that's a very good point. Liver failure is definitely not one of the approximately 30 different AIDS-defining disorders. I mean, I'm sure some people would love to add it to that list, because if they could, then they could claim that people were dying from liver failure induced by HIV. But the liver failure has been long associated with the use of a lot of antiretroviral drugs. And their only defense really is that the reason people are dying from these organ failures and other side effects of the drugs is because they're living longer. But of course, nobody's ever tested AIDS drugs to show that people are living longer. And they are diagnosing healthier and healthier people. In other words, they used to diagnose people on the basis of severe clinical symptoms in the 1980s. But now they diagnose people basically on the HIV test alone. They're not even looking at the CD4 count, which is a questionable immune status marker. But if they take a healthy person off the street who's one of those 1 out of 1,000 who unluckily tests positive, a person who thought the day before they took the test they were perfectly healthy, all of a sudden they put them on AIDS drugs, well, obviously they're going to last a lot longer than somebody who came to hospital in some kind of a crisis and was diagnosed with AIDS at that point. So the belief that the drugs are making people longer is an illusion based on the fact that they keep diagnosing healthier and healthier people to start with.
Of course, what they've never done, would be terrified to do, is to take a group of long-term survivors who have never had any of the drug therapy but have had lifestyle and behavior modification and compare the quality of life, the immune markers, and longevity of that group to a group that gets quick diagnosis, quick treatment.
Well, actually, at the University of Texas, there's a quiet little study going on where they're looking at people who are not currently taking AIDS drugs, who've been HIV positive for 8 years or more. And if anybody's interested in participating in that study, which is just a survey, perhaps they could contact you, and you can. I'll send you the information about how to contact a professor. It's a very rare study. Also, in Canada, there's a study of an immune treatment called CAPAX, which is they're looking at whether it has an impact on the CD4 count. Well, I don't think the CD4 count is a very important marker, but the important thing about this trial is it's a study of people who are not taking ARVs. So quietly, some doctors are looking at these people who are HIV positive, not taking antiretroviral drugs, and somehow are staying healthy. Of course, it's not a big surprise to us, but it's a big surprise to them, people who believe in the fatal virus theory.
Well, David Crowe, thank you for all the good work you're doing. And the website is rethinkingaids.com. And on our website, collected from David Crowe, we have over 1,600 leading scientists, Nobel Prize winners in AIDS science, who show that every argument put forth by the AIDS community, we can completely deconstruct it. They have no science on their side. They do have a lot of propaganda, lots of money, lots of profits. They just don't have the truth. David Crowe, my guest. Now we go to the final segment of our program, Talk Back. Time for you to call in at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And we'll be happy to take your calls on any of the issues that you find important. And while the phones are starting to light up here, let me mention that this Thursday is the world premiere. Now, we are sold out, and we originally were sold out after about 5 minutes, but then we got a larger theater. It's going to be at the movie theater on the Upper West Side, beautiful place, largest theater they have. And however, we have spent the last 2 days in my office going through and speaking with hundreds and hundreds of people saying, are you really coming? I mean, if you're not, please surrender your seat to someone who wants to come and doesn't have a space. So we've gotten 22 seats freed up as of Mike talking right now. So if you give a call at 646-926-5422, 646-926-5422, or go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, you'll see that the premiere of Seeds of Death, the genetically engineered seeds, that's going to be, I'm going to give a free copy of the film because I want school teachers to show it in their classes and others to share it. I'm going to give you a $25 book free, mine, Living in the Moment, is a gift. And all the proceeds beyond the cost of doing this are going to go, my goal is, and I think we're going to meet it, feed 100 homeless veterans in northern Florida through two different food banks that we work with, and also getting them 100 sleeping bags, it looks like, for the winter. So it's good on all levels. Plus, it's going to be one heck of an informed night, plus a whole panel afterwards. So that's it. We got 22 seats and a call line. Those who don't want to place a credit card online can say they'll show up and do a will call. That means your name will be on the list, and it's on a first-come, first-served basis, 646-926-5422. Then Sunday, I'll be on Long Island, 2 p.m., same thing. Call 631-423-7611 in Huntington, Long Island, at the Huntington Arts Cinema, 2 p.m., same movie. I'm going to give a book and a video there also. 631-423-7611, 631-423-7611. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi, who's online. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I happen to have watched the dance video, one of the dance videos that was on your site. What a scream that was.
Yeah.
The outfits, oh, the makeup,
hey,
here we go.
Hey, we all dressed bad in the 70s, didn't we, in the 80s?
I just saw a clip from Sly and the Family Stone this morning, and I was looking at their outfits. It's like, oh, dear God.
We dressed equally bad.
What were we thinking?
And the hair, I'll tell you, that would have been the safest place in America to hide if there was ever a nuclear war, is behind someone's hairdo, because nothing would penetrate it. But you know what I loved about it? The dancing was so much fun. Didn't everybody have a good time?
They did. That's for sure. When you get done watching the clip, you feel good because people are just happy and they're having some fun.
Well, you can see that. And what's nice is, now I want to thank the dozens of people who were there and filming 50 different dance parties. and they took home movies, and some are better than others. And I like it when they sweep slowly across so we see the people and all the different ages and groups. Every background, every age, every ethnicity, they're all there. And then see all the people on the dance floors. And I think we have a new one just went up today, number 4. And that's a real hoop because in it someone's doing interviews with people, which are kind of fun. And then you see people, and all I see is this bob of blonde hair. It's a funny scene you see in the back. We're all dancing, and suddenly this boing, 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 up and down, like someone's on a pogo stick. Never saw the person's face, just saw this hair. Someone was having a great time. So you can watch this by going up on progressiveradionetwork.com, look under dance, or garynall.com, look under dance, and it's you'll see the first three, but this is number 4, and it's a hoot. We have time for one quick question, Luann, before we go.
Well, actually, I am going to read you one comment. There's a gentleman, Sonny, from Washington, D.C., and he says, I want to let you know that a bunch of my friends here at George Washington University love your shows on social issues and your commentaries on current events. And he says, man, does it make our professors seem out of touch? And he's just thanking you. So I know we don't have a lot of time, but I do have other emails, and I'll be happy to share them another day.
Thank you, Luann. Luann Panessi, who gets the emails and then reads the important ones that she finds over the Ask Gary at GaryNall.com over the air. To all of our listeners on WPFW, thank you very much for, A, supporting an important station and its good work, and also for listening to this show every day, Monday through Friday. And for all of the other listeners at all of our sister stations, WBAI in New York, KPFK in Los Angeles, and all over the world, we appreciate you listening in. I'm Gary Nall. Have a nice day.
I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feel, and I'm happy again.
U-Tree Sleed, remember that music?
Yeah. I'll do like Hillary Clinton and tell you, you know, I wrote that song.
Did you?
Well, it's funny. I was saying to Matt, the engineer, that we are on the same wavelength today. That's what I'm following up on, your discussion on AIDS, with Hillary Clinton declaring yesterday, pretty much, that she single-handedly will stamp out AIDS all over the world in 5 years flat.
Good.
Yeah.
Maybe if she cooks her people, that's the only way it...
Well, that's where it's going.
All right.
There's no shame, no limit to this woman's self-interest. No limit to it.
You bet. We look forward to listening to you, and I'll be back on Sunday night at 8 p.m. doing Talk Back. Have a nice weekend, everyone.
Singing, you too, Gary.
And dancing in the rain.